Wasn't that good? Just for those who weren't here this morning, because I was speaking this morning, just to let you know, we're from Causeway Coast Vineyard, and there's me, my wife, my two kids, and my my three spiritual children. So Darren, walking at the back, Ryan and Alex, these guys are kind of keep me on my toes. Ryan's been a Christian for 3 weeks. Darren... Stand up, say hello, come on, let everybody see you. Hey. And then Darren's been a Christian for 5 months. Say hello, Darren. And Alex has been a Christian for 8 months. So these guys are kind of keep the fire burning in me, you know, hanging out with them and being around them. But, you know, it's been a pleasure to be here. We came yesterday and we had a great day yesterday, great morning this morning, and some lovely food in the Bush Town. What do you call it? Bush Town, is it? Bush something. Yeah, and so that was lovely. So thanks to the people there. So we're happy to be here, and thanks all for coming out to the house. I just want to say a special welcome to everybody who is visiting. I know I'm a visitor, but I kind of feel like part of the family now, you know. And also just want to thank Lauren for coming. Aaron and Lauren, who I embarrassed this morning. Aaron when he came, but I want to embarrass his girlfriend now. Lauren, and just say thank you for coming. You guys are so welcome. And it's lovely to have you. So I'm just going to share a bit of my story. And if I start rabbiting on too long, just like start throwing eggs at me or something. But, you know, my kind of story, the way I describe it really is like a triangle trying to fit it into a square. Like my life just didn't really fit. The life I was living didn't really fit into the life that God was trying to give me and trying to show me who I really was, you know. And when I was 15, this is kind of where things start to change for me. I was 15. Young lad, arrogant, all that kind of thing. And my mum became a Christian when I was about 9 or 10. My dad was a heavy drinker, and she lived in a sort of a verbally abusive relationship and stuff. And all my dad's family are into sort of fraud, and some couple of them been in prison into crime and stuff. So that was the influence from my dad's side. And then God wasn't in my family's side at all, in any of the sides, you know. And then when my mum became a Christian in a miraculous way, we started to have an influence, a godly influence come into our life. But I had this sort of dichotomy where I had this like criminal side of things going on with my dad's family. And then suddenly my mum was just this person who popped out of nowhere who suddenly started, she's a real woman of faith and seeing miracles and stuff like that. So I had a bit of an influence there. And when I got to about 15, I went along to a conference in Southern Ireland in Avoca, a place called Avoca, Red Cross they called it. I don't know if any of you guys know it, but it was like a big conference where everyone in Ireland and beyond went. And me and my brother went. And to be honest, we went just for the girls, if I'm totally honest. 15 years of age, he was 18. We thought, let's go along, see if we can bag ourselves a girl, you know. So, and the main reason was, if I'm honest, I heard that I'm not allowed to tell this. I heard that the Slazenger girls were there. You know Slazenger, the tennis make? The daughters of the guy, the head Slazenger family were there. So me and my brother thought, happy days. You know what I mean? Get in there with them. We could picture it, you know, get married to in this big palace and all that stuff, you know. And I think my mum liked the idea even more. So me and my brother went along, and we're at this conference and with all these Christians, non-Christians. And we sat at the back. I remember the moment, and the seminal moment in my life. I sat at the back, and there was probably about similar, you know, amount of people as what there is here. And the guy was preaching, and he's talking about Jesus and this kind of stuff. And me and my brother are at the back row with two other lads. And we're just messing about. We're like throwing bits of paper at people and messing about, having a laugh, looking at the girls, all that. And then suddenly, this guy points at me and he says, God wants you, like that. And I seen him point at me. And honestly, I felt something that I can't describe before. I felt like a feeling of, I describe it as I felt pure. I felt happy. I felt elated. I felt joy. All those feelings, you know. But what happened, within about 30 seconds, I was on the floor weeping. And I'm talking like snot everywhere, you know what I mean, proper crying. I was just crying my eyes out. And I wouldn't really do that because, you know, 1 minute I'm trying to play it cool with me brother and friends. Next thing I'm on the floor crying. But what I felt was unbelievable. I couldn't describe it, but I felt free. I felt like I was free. And I was crying and everybody left by the end of it. And this guy, this preacher came over to me and he said, that is God showing himself to you. Now, that doesn't seem too much of an impressive line, but what happened about 12 hours before that is I'd had a big argument with my mum and a friend if God's so real, why doesn't he just show himself to you? What's all this faith business? Why can't he just turn up and say, look, here I am. You know what I mean? Let's get to know each other and be on with it. What's all this like? Is he there? Is he not there? And that was kind of my philosophy. And I said, if he's so real, why doesn't he just show himself to you? And my mom's friend said, you should be careful what you say. That's what she said to me. Within 12 hours, I'm on the floor with a preacher saying, that's God showing himself to you. Now, that rocked my world, you know. I was like, well, this is real, you know, because I wouldn't have done that. And the guy said to me, do you want to accept Jesus? Do you want to give your heart to Jesus? And I thought, well, not really. I want to be a pop star. You know, and I didn't really see too many Christian pop stars apart from, like, Cliff Richard. And I wasn't a big fan, if I'm honest, you know. So I thought, well, not really. But I didn't want to offend the fella because he was a nice fella. So I went, well, okay, yeah. So I just sort of prayed along with him. But inside, I'm thinking, nah, man. You know what I mean? I was seeing, like, my name in lights and the thousands of screaming girls, and I thought, that's what I'm looking for. Not really into, like, Cliff Richard, the sandals, the rainbow strap and all that. So I didn't really go, you know, in my heart, I didn't really go for it. But something had happened. And I went along to church. My mum went to a church in Toxteth in a rough part of Liverpool. And it was an amazing church. You know, I mean, it was quite old school, but you know, God's spirit was there. And I went along a few times. And literally, as soon as the people start singing, I just start crying, and I would be up in the I'll be up in the toilet, and I'd be like washing my face, and I'd be coming down, and whenever I heard the singing, I mean, it wasn't the singing, it was the Holy Spirit. Maybe some of you guys felt that tonight who've never been around this environment, but you just feel something inside. You can't quite describe it, you know, and that was what I was feeling, and I was just crying. I thought, I can't keep going there because I look like an idiot, like I'm sitting there crying all the time. I'll have to stop going. So I just stopped going. And looking back, I know I was on the fence, you know, I had to make a decision. I was going to go for God, or I was going to go back into the world where, you know, where I was from. And I chose to not go to God. I chose to go the other way. And I was 15 years of age. And then by the time I got to about 18, I formed a boy band. You know, now many of you thinking, well, you don't look like much of a boy band candidate. But back then, I had lots of hair. I had the essential ingredient, which was a blonde centre part. With the little step wedge thing in the back. So, I mean, I was rocking it, you know. Those were the days, I tell you. So that was kind of where I was at. And I thought, let's get a band together. You know, my dream was to be a pop star. So I thought, let's do it. So I went to the school, this sixth form college, which is quite very rough in Liverpool. And I stood up in the English lesson. I'd been there about a week. Stood up in the middle of the lesson and said, who wants to join a boy band with me in a rough school, like in the middle of the... Now, I was an outsider. I only joined the sixth form college, you know. And they was like, who is this head the ball? Like, you know what I mean? They all thought I was mad, you know. But I ended up I picked the sort of best looking lads, the lads who had all the girls. I picked them and they joined me band after much persistence of me promising them fame and fortune. Even turned up at one boy's house and said, listen, man, you know, you're making the biggest mistake of your life. You need to join my boy band. And eventually he did. So anyway, we had this band, and I don't know kind of what happened really, because it was kind of like all the things I dreamed of started happening. Now, I wasn't very good, if I'm totally honest. All I had was, like, I was a dreamer. I used to just sit there dreaming, and we'll be doing this and we'll be doing that. And then suddenly it started to happen. And I was like, hang on, this is actually real. And then within, like, within a couple of months, we had the local newspaper doing a big article on us. And we had, like, Nickelodeon TV channel. They came, I don't know if you know, there's a presenter called Jenny Powell, who's quite big back then. And she turned up with the Nickelodeon TV crew and was like, we want to film your band. So she's like, can we interview you? And we do, and we were like, happy days. And so this was happening. And then we got spotted by a manager off this Nickelodeon, who then we got offered a record deal with RCA Records, which we turned down because we thought we were too cool. And basically, we didn't like the manager. We said, we'll have your deal, but we don't want the manager. And they went, well, it's only with the manager. And we went, forget it, man, and walked away from, like, a record deal with the biggest record company in the world, you know. So this is the kind of stuff we were doing. We were gigging up and down the country. We were getting paid to like, you know, to sing like three songs, and they put us up in a hotel, give us a wad of cash, free drinks, all that kind of stuff. That was the sort of beginnings of it, you know. And then it started to climb another level, and we started to mix with bands like Westlife, Backstreet Boys, these kind of people. So basically the bands that were starting to launch, we were alongside them. So like Westlife first were coming out then, and then we were lined up with them and Backstreet Boys and Atomic Kitten. all these kind of bands, you know, all these pop bands, A1, all these kind of pop bands. So we were in that whole stable of, like, we were gigging with them, we were playing festivals with them. We were like 20,000 screaming girls kind of thing, you know, it was that kind of stuff, giving autographs. We were like turning lights on in cities, and it was quite crazy at that time. And, you know, I even had girls sleeping outside my house, much to my mother's dismay. So it got quite crazy at that stage. I mean, we were in like nationwide teen magazines, like double page spreads on us. And so that was the kind of things. It was just rolling and rolling. And we didn't know what was going on. We just loved it. I mean, obviously, we were 18, 19, 20 and thinking, happy days. Everyone wants to give us stuff. So we were enjoying it. But I remember even then, you know, we did a big gig. I think it was the one with the Backstreet Boys and some other stuff. And we had free drink. It was in a posh hotel and an after party and stuff. And there was free drink then. And I basically got my rucksack and just filled it full of bottles of beer. But I didn't have to because it was all free. But, you know, you can take the lad out of the city, you know. But so we just kept doing that, and I ended up, like, it went quite bad, and the things that sort of were going on. But I remember one of the guys there approaching my band member and said, listen, your friend has got a problem with alcohol. You know, he was like, sort of he'd seen it before, you know. And he said, you know, you need to watch him. And I didn't think I had a problem with alcohol. I just thought, like, I liked it, you know. You know, the whole thing about, like, I go to rehab, but I'm not a quitter, you know, one of them. So kind of that was sort of where I was at, really, with it all. And then we got a crunch moment when Simon Cowell heard our demo. And it was a song that I'd written called Please Come Home with a Friend in my band. And I don't know how, but it made its way into Simon Cowell's hands. He heard it. He says, I love it. I want to bring your band to London. I want you to showcase, which is when you perform just for him in a room, and then he offers you a record deal if he likes you. If he doesn't, he gives you the taxi fare, you know, or your BFH. So one of them. So really, we turned up. We did our gig in a place called Nomis Studios, which is where the Spice Girls auditioned, and we played our thing. And he got up from his seat, and he said, "Lads, I'm going to turn you into superstars." That was what he said, and we were like. Now, Simon Cowell hadn't been on the telly at that stage. This is before your pop idols and all the rest of it, you know. So he hadn't been on the telly, but he was the head of the label. So we were like, happy days, that'll do us. So we went away. We went home on the train back to Liverpool, and we were partying on the train. We were like, this is it, we've made it. And we got back, and we didn't hear anything. We were meant to go back to London to sign the contract, and we didn't hear nothing. And our manager was like, listen, I'll be in touch soon. You know, tomorrow turned into the day after and day after. And we were starting to get a little bit anxious. And what had happened, it transpired that after we left, our manager had a fallout with Simon Cowell over money, basically, like how much cut he was going to get and all the rest of it. So we found out then, further down the line, that actually, because of financial arguments, we lost a deal. So, like, it was literally like somebody pulled the carpet from under my world, you know. And then about 6 months later, we had another meeting with the manager, and Simon Cowell was in the Astoria in Manchester, and he came over to me in the reception and he said, get another manager and come back and see me. But by the time that happened, I started to descend into an addiction, really. Not just alcohol, but cocaine was my main vice at that time. And I started to, my best friend from school was a drug dealer, and he was making his way up the ranks in Liverpool. His cousin was very, 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 very well known as a big drug dealer, a big importer. So because of that influence, he was able to climb the ranks quite quick. Now, we were best friends from school, me and this lad. So, you know, wherever he went, I went, and vice versa. So I found myself sitting in parties with notorious gangsters, millionaires, boys who were very, very well up in the chain, you know, in the food chain. But the only problem was, for me, it wasn't a problem, but for me, I wasn't like these boys. I was a pop star. Or a failed one or whatever. So I didn't want to be a gangster. I just wanted to be a pop star. So all I was doing was drowning my sorrows, thinking, man, I could have been that. You know the way you do when you have a few drinks, look what I could have been. You know, I was almost there, and giving it all that kind of stuff. But these guys love me, because when you're in a party with all gangsters, everybody's standing around trying to be the next big thing. But I was just there with a guitar or having a bit of laugh. And so they all gravitated towards me, and I became friends with some of them, which probably wasn't the great thing when you've got a millionaire drug dealer. And you've got a cocaine problem. It's not the best match, is it? And it resulted for me really in an abyss of addiction. I just ended up really, really low. I didn't know how to get out. I was in a hole that I couldn't get out, really. Now, it started off as fun. It started off as something that was enjoyable. But by the end of it, it had its claws in me and I couldn't get out. And it resulted one night there's a lad that we knew who was a local gangster, and he gave me £500 worth of pure cocaine. And I woke my friend up from a party, said, come on, man, take this with me. And me and him took it, and my friend overdosed, and he got taken off to hospital. And I stood in the street and literally I started convulsing. And I knew I was going to die that night. And I stood there and I could see a door. As I stood in that street, I could see a door. And I'm getting closer to this door. And I knew if I got to that door, I would go to hell, 100%. Now, obviously, at that time in my life, I had no time for God. I was kind of, it was like sex, drugs, and rock and roll. You know, that was the sort of the way it was. But I knew that I didn't want to go through that door. So I prayed. I said, God, please keep me alive tonight. Keep my friend alive, and I'll turn to you. That was all I had left. I had nothing left. I just felt naked is the way I felt. You know, and I believe that's what happens when you die. You feel naked. There's nothing you can lean on. I could have been the biggest pop star in the world. I could have been a millionaire. But in that moment, it wouldn't have done me any good. I had nothing to lean on. You know, when you're sick, you can go to the hospital or go to your family or your friends. But when you're about to die, you can't lean on anybody apart from Jesus. And that's what I chose to do. So I said, Lord, I'm sorry. Please help me. And you know what? God got me through that night. And it was a long night. And literally every time I thought, this is it, I'm going, it was like somebody pulled me back. Somebody just pulled me back enough to live a little bit longer. And my friend got through it. He discharged himself the next morning, which was a miracle. And then I got through it. And then what did I think? I thought, forget God. Let's carry on. So I carried on. But it was never the same. I always had something inside of me. You know, God keeps you to your word, doesn't he? You know, if you make a deal with God, he's not going to let you forget, you know. And I went through a few more months of trying to be who I used to be, but I just couldn't do it. I had no desire. I mean, I was good. I was a good party. I was good at taking drugs. I was good at that stuff. I was good at womanizing. That was what I was good at. I'd had years of practice. But suddenly, I couldn't do it anymore. Something was different in me. And I ended up going to a church meeting. It was a New Year conference in Liverpool that somebody invited me along. And I went there. I went into the room and I sat there. And as the guy started preaching, I turned to my friend and I said, I dreamt this last night, this exact setting here, all these people, him walking up, like the whole thing, I dreamt the whole thing. And I was like, what's all that about? It's freaky. And he kind of just smiled. And I went back the next night. And the next night, when I came there, I sat down and I felt literally like a hurricane of fear is the only way I can describe it. Now, I don't know if anybody has panic attacks, but this is what I was getting, severe panic attacks. I would be paralyzed on the floor for like an hour. I couldn't even reach to get my phone. It was that bad, you know. And I had one of these panic attacks at church in this moment, and it literally just hit me like a hurricane. And I ran out the building. And as I sat out the building, whatever I was feeling left me. The fear, the anxiety left me. So I thought, that's okay, I can go back. So as I went to go back, it came back. And it was like, I didn't know the time, but it was literally, it was like a spiritual opposition, you know. So I sat outside on some stairs and I said, God, whatever I've got, you can have. And I felt the way I did when I was 15. I felt that feeling. I felt that love, that those arms around me. And he was just saying, son, I've never gone anywhere. I've always been here with my arms open, just waiting for you. And I love you. And I just began to weep and weep. And I was crying so loud that a few of the guys heard me crying. I think two or three fellas came out of the meeting to walk towards me. And as I looked up at them, I could see beams of light protruding out their eyes. Just beams of light just shining out their eyes. And I wasn't drunk. I wasn't on any drugs. But what I was doing, I believe, was I was seeing for the first time. You know, the Bible says you were blind, but now you see. And I believe that God was allowing me to see with my new eyes, and I could see something that I'd never seen before, and it was amazing. I went back to my bed sitting in a rough part of Liverpool where I was living, and my brother was a drinker. He lived on the floor. He just used to sit there with his hoodie up, drinking bottles of cider. You know, that's kind of how bad it got at the end, you know. But I went back to this hellhole. It was like a miserable existence that I was living in. And you know what? The place was illuminated with the presence of God. My bedroom was illuminated with the presence of God. There was a light in that room which I'd never experienced before, and that was the Holy Spirit. And I just began to get to know Jesus. I got a Bible, and I just sit there in my room reading and praying, and my brother didn't know what was going on. You know, the last time we were like drinking together, and all I wanted to do was talk about Jesus. I started going to church. I found a church. I went along. And, you know, that's the kind of journey that happened with me. I just fell in love with Jesus is the only way I can describe it. And, you know, a kind of pivotal moment for me was when I met there was a millionaire gangster that I used to party with called Jeff, and he owned all the nightclubs in Liverpool. And I used to start, I prayed for him, you know. For about 6 months, I prayed for him, and I went to work. I got a job. I never really worked, but God got me a job, and I started doing that. And I was on my lunch break, and I bumped into Jeff, literally bumped into him. I was walking in the post office, and he was walking out, and we smacked into each other. Now, it was amazing, because I'd been praying for him for 6 months, and suddenly, there we were, in front of each other. And he said to me, "Where have you been? I haven't seen you around." And he actually said, "All right, mate, where have you been? I haven't seen you around, kidda." Like that, you know. I said, "Oh, I'm a Christian now, and I'm living for Jesus." And this guy, it's kind of, no, just obviously this kid's sensitive and stuff, but I won't tell you what he did, but he did something that wasn't good, involving a taxi, a person in it, and fire. And he was known for murder, you know. And anyway, he looks at the floor, and I'm thinking, what's he going to do? And he looks at me, and he says, "I need that, something like that in my life." You know, this was a guy who had, like, on the outside, he had everything. He was feared. He was a head of a firm. He was a millionaire. He had girls and champagne and all this kind of stuff. But he knew what I had was real, and he knew what he had was empty. And, you know, I started to see things like that, you know, people just responding and people seeing something in me that was different. And then I guess Jesus started to get a hold of my life. And this is the most exciting part, isn't it, when he gets hold of your life. And like I said, I felt like a triangle fitting in a square. It was like I didn't quite fit with who I was. You know, I dreamed of this fame and all this kind of stuff, but it wasn't really who I was. And when I came to Jesus, I felt like I could lose the mask. You know, I could let go. I could relax. I didn't have to try and be anybody. And, you know, when God told me to, the Lord spoke to me one day. I had a job 2 weeks. I've been working there for 2 weeks in a data inputting. Just typing stuff in and that kind of thing. And I heard the voice of God for the first time after being a Christian for 2 weeks. Audibly, I heard God speak to me. He said, "Take Bibles to China." Now, one, I've never been to China, didn't know too much about it. The Bible, I'd only just had one for a couple of weeks, so that was new to me. But I literally heard somebody that clear. I turned around. I thought someone was behind me. "Take Bibles to China." Now, nobody was there, so I had two options. One, I was losing my marbles. Or two, that's what people meant when they said God speaks to you. And I knew I wasn't losing me head because I was so happy. So I prayed. I sat there and working under my breath, and I said, "God, if this is you, will you bring a man to me and tell me to take Bibles to China?" That was it. I thought, that's even a hard one for God. Do you know what I mean? And I ended up, within about a week, I ended up in a Sisters of Mercy retreat, which is like nuns. Some of you guys might know that. It's just a place where nuns go, for a place of solitude, and you switch off and relax. So I'm sat there with all these nuns, and the fella that brought me, and I'm like, "Man, what am I doing here? This is like, you know, I know I wanted a new life, but not this." So I'm just thinking, "God, what am I doing here? Get me out of here." Suddenly, a fella walks in through the door, sits down next to me, shakes my hand, and says, "My name is John, and I've been delivering Bibles in China for the past year." And I'm like, "Whoa, this is crazy, man. This is real. How far does it go? How far down the rabbit hole can you go?" It's like, where does this thing stop? And I realized that day that anything was possible. God could do anything in my life, and he wanted to do anything in my life. And within 9 months of that meeting, I was smuggling Bibles to China. It was my birthday when I was in China. I was, I'd been a Christian for just a year, a little under a year. And I was sitting there, and God showed me something. He said, "Look, you were living for yourself, killing yourself and doing your desires, but now you're living for me." I got lost in a taxi in the middle of China after doing a drop-off. I got picked to do the first drop-off, but we got lost. The taxi driver didn't speak English, I didn't speak Chinese, and he's lost. And he's taking me through all these back roads, and there's like kids in the gutter, and it was awful. And I'm thinking, this guy's going to do me in, man. I envisaged him pulling over in the back street and all his boys getting out. And I was like, "God, what's going on?" And the Lord just said, "Look, son, you're living for me now. You know, isn't it exciting?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, it's definitely that. Just get me home, Lord." You know what I mean? So that was amazing, you know. And God started doing amazing things. And then I also won a holiday with the God Channel trip to go to Israel. Now, this was before China. But what happened was, I went to church one night, and the God Channel were there doing a tour of all the cities in the UK, and they came to Liverpool. Now, my church was about 700 people, the church I went to in Liverpool. And I went in that night, and God said, "I'm going to speak to you tonight." And I sat there, and everybody gave out these postcards, and they said, "Write your name on a card, and we're going to do a little draw." So I wrote my name on the card. 700 people, they pull out my name, and they say, "Okay, come to the front." So they bring me to the front, and they say, "What's your story?" And I told them, I said, "Look, I just met Jesus, man, a few months ago." And they were like, "Okay, we've got to put you into another draw. We pick one winner from all 12 churches. So you haven't won, don't get too excited, but you might do." So anyway, I went home that night to my bed sit, and I'm like, I'm ecstatic, and I phoned my friend Chris. He was kind of the guy who was discipling me, the guy who was getting alongside me, and I said, "Chris, look, this is what's happened." And And he was like, "Well, do you think you're gonna go?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, God basically said that, you know, I'm gonna win it, you know." Sorry, that was the part I forgot. When he did, before he did the draw, the Lord said, "You're gonna win." Audibly again, like the China thing. Audibly, you are gonna win. So he pulled my name out, and I told Chris, and Chris said, "Well, if God's told you you're gonna win, you're gonna win." And I said, "Okay, will you come with me then? Because you could take a person with you." So he said, "Okay, yeah." So anyway, within a week, I got the call. I said, "Man, they said you've won. You and a friend, 5-star hotels, 10 days tour in the Holy Land." And I was like, "Oh man, this is amazing," you know. So literally, I was a Christian for 6 months. I was on the Sea of Galilee, reading my Bible for the first time about the things that I was reading about the places that I was at. And it just was amazing. And then on Pentecost Sunday, they did an open-air festival in King David's Citadel in Jerusalem, where the God Channel filmed it live on telly, and they got me up to give my testimony on telly. You know, I seen a vision of angels that day in that citadel. And God was just blessing me and blessing me to the point where I was like, "What are you doing? Will you stop? I feel a bit bad, you know. You know, can you share some with someone else," kind of thing, you know what I mean? And I was asking other people, and I was like, "You know, what's it like for you when you became a Christian?" And they were like, "Well, it wasn't like that." And I just thought it was the norm. I thought it was the standard. And I was getting, you know, it was just unbelievable what God was doing. But, you know, he's so loving and he's so faithful. And I believe my mom was a praying mother. I used to wake up when I was a kid, and she'd be over on her knees with her hands on me, just praying over me in the middle of the night. I'd wake up and she'd be praying. And I believed, like, my mother's prayers got me this, like, storehouse of gifts. And when I came to Jesus, he just gave me them all. And you know, my mom's a real hero of mine, you know. And basically, that's what happened. So I was in Israel, and it was amazing. I was in China. And then the third big one, God said to me, "Go to Bible college." Now, I left school with nothing. I'm talking like nothing. So I thought, I can't go to Bible college. But he said, "Yes, you can." Now, I had this thing, I had a pretty good thing, which I'm so grateful of, whereas I could hear God quite good, you know, and he would speak to me quite a lot. I don't get it as much now. I think he's kind of, you know, saying, "Look, I spoke you a bit, come on." but I would have had it all the time. I get it in the pivotal moments. And God said, "Go to London Bible College." Now, this, I looked into it, and this was like the top most prestigious college in Europe. It's like the big one where all the rich people go and all that. And I thought, they're not going to let me in. But okay, if you say do it, I'll do it. So I applied, and they sent a letter back saying no chance, basically. In middle class terms, you haven't got a chance. So what I did, I thought, I'll tell you what, I'll get the train from Liverpool to London and I'll knock on the front door. That seems like a good idea. So I did that. I got the train from Liverpool to London, turned up at the front door of this lovely establishment, and I said, "Listen, you told me I can't come here, but God told me I can. What's the score?" And when they picked the mouth up off the ground, they said, "You better come in." So they brought me in, and they said, "Look, what's your situation?" I told them about Jesus. I told them everything, and they were literally sat there like that, you know. It just gobsmacked them there. And they said, "I'll tell you what, we'll give you a distance learning course. If you do that over 9 months, and if you pass, all the modules will review your application." So I went home and I studied. And I never studied in my life, if I'm honest. And I remember, like, I got a job in a Christian cafe part-time. I studied the rest of the time. I was out in the park studying and just doing these modules. And I got a real thirst and a hunger for the Bible. And I loved it. It was a great time of my life. Now, it still seemed impossible that I would get into this college because I had no money. And it was like big books, you know. But you know what? I knew Jesus could do anything because I'd seen it so many times. So I just went along with it. Anyway, I applied. I did all my modules, got the letter. "You've been accepted into London Bible College." And I was like, "Man, this is crazy." So I went up. My sort of mentor guy who I led my mom to the Lord and baptized her and me, drove me up to London. And you know, on my first day, I walked into the gates and there was this lovely looking Northern Irish girl handing out the welcome packs. And the Lord spoke to me again, clear as day, and he said, "That's your wife." And I didn't tell her. I didn't tell her that. And I was like, "Happy days." "Thank you, Jesus. You always give you the best. Give us the best." So I got to know my wife. When I say get to know, I mean probably stalked her, would be more accurate. So I just started kind of, you know, turning up where she was and, you know, over coffee. "Hey, how you doing?" One of them, you know, the way you do. And got to know her. And, you know, she was amazing. And we started going out within 3 weeks. Within 2 years, we were married. And, you know, life was just amazing. It was great, you know. But I'll tell you what I was experiencing was the flip side. You know, it is a spiritual battle, isn't it, this thing? It's like, although Jesus has won the battle, you know, the devil is dirty and he plays dirty and he'll drag anything up at you to throw at you. So I was experiencing all this stuff, and I don't think you can experience all that stuff without experiencing some intimidation or some level of opposition. And I experienced that. I started to get post-traumatic stress disorder, basically PTSD, after another near-death experience I had, when I had a fight in Liverpool with three fellas when I was high on drugs and drink before I became a Christian. And after that, I started getting panic attacks and stuff. Well, it kicked off again at Bible College, and I was in a really bad way. I was in hospital getting like heart scans done, and I couldn't focus. It was just constantly under anxiety attacks. And I was like sleeping in the day in my room in Bible College. I was on campus, you know, and I'd be sleeping and depressed. And so although I had all this amazing experience with Jesus, I had this other stuff that was just coming at me so hard. And I was fighting it. And then within about, well, I left Bible College after a year. I did a year. And soon after,